Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolsky, with my co-host, Dr. Carl Jr. And we're going to, if you're not exercising while taking your GLP-1 medicine, we're going to convince you today, because there's a new cool study that just came out, and it's actually an extension of a study that we have definitely discussed in the past, but
we've at least mentioned.
Yeah, so what's the original study?
So the original study is called S-Lite. Now, this is using Saxenda, the trade name for liraglutide, the daily GLP-1 receptor agonist.
OG, an OG.
That was, once upon a time, one of the first approved for type 2 diabetes.
It was
the second one approved as Victoza for type 2 diabetes. And we were just talking about cardiovascular outcome trials a little bit ago. It was the first of all these medications to show a reduction in cardiovascular events, a reduction in death, a reduction in cardiovascular death in those with type 2 diabetes and established disease.
As Saxenda, it was the first GLP-1 agonist approved for weight management slash obesity. So
several years ago.
So they have got a lot of cool studies on this. And by itself, we've talked about this before, around 7-8% average body weight loss, which
again, that's average.
That's
and
right.
So the people who really respond to it do very, very well. Yeah. And by the way, it's going to be generic soon. So that might help some of these cost issues.
I believe only generic for the Victoza dose. Is that right? I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about this trial. So the S-Lite trial. So this was a cool lifestyle comparison trial with this medication. Recruited patients started off with an 8-week very low calorie diet.
How low?
So it was 800 calories a day using meal replacement protein shakes,
protons,
vegetables, etc. These types of studies, I know they sound extreme, but they are the ones that show the best nutritional aspect weight reduction, and for people with diabetes, the best diabetes remission. Doesn't mean it's sustainable. That's not what we're debating today.
I just saw him eat 800 calories snack.
So these people were randomized originally after that 800 calorie per day meal replacement diet to liraglutide, titrated to 3 milligrams daily, with their usual activity, plus usual activity, a true exercise prescription plan, exercise plus liraglutide, or placebo.
What was the amount of weight loss?
So to get into the trial, they had to achieve a 5% weight reduction to even get randomized.
So 5% within 8 weeks, that's not too bad.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
And so... And so then talk about the exercise plan that came with it. It was a 6-week introduction phase and then a 2 times per week supervised group sessions that included cycling, circuit training, like the strength training of moderate to vigorous intensity. And they had apparently some variety of exercises that they could do.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
It was a good exercise program.
Good. It wasn't bad.
Yeah. And so 195 patients met that threshold, were randomized. And those people, on average, achieved about a 13 kilogram, which is about a 13% weight reduction through that 800 calorie per day meal replacement plan. That's a good weight reduction. Now, it is those who responded, right? So anytime people get 5% weight loss in any type of early intervention, it predicts long-term benefits. And so we call those early responders. And so obviously these people responded very well. It was a selection bias for those people.
Yeah.
And they ultimately had this 13 kilogram
similar
percent weight reduction. Yeah. And so then they were randomized. And what happened was at 1 year, there was another 4 kilogram or percent weight reduction in the exercise group. Overall, there was a 7 kilogram or percent weight reduction with liraglutide, Saxenda.
No exercise with that, right?
Right. That was the non-exercise group. And but in the combinations, liraglutide plus the exercise program that they continued, they had a negative 9.5 kilogram or percent weight reduction. And the combination had a relatively significant better fat percentage reduction. So they had better lean mass, better fat loss.
Body composition, you know, stuff that a lot of people should care about.
Yeah. And it was the only the combination group had statistically significant hemoglobin A1C or average blood sugar reduction and cardiovascular cardiorespiratory fitness.
Which so we would expect. If you're not doing exercise, you're not going to improve your cardiorespiratory fitness.
Now, those numbers I just gave were compared to placebo. So if we look at the graph, and Spencer and I are looking at the graph right now, the initial change of weight was 13 kilograms. The placebo group started to regain. That always happens. So the placebo group ended up actually regaining about 6 to 7 kilograms or percent of their new baseline weight. What is that green one? The exercise only did have a hint of weight regain by the end, but they did a pretty darn good job of maintaining. And that's kind of one of our keys out of this. Exercise is a huge deal for maintaining. We've always known that. Yeah. That's one of the key factors in weight maintenance.
Pretty well known.
Now, the liraglutide group, they did just a hint better at maintaining their weight. Not body composition, mind you, but weight. And then, of course, the exercise plus liraglutide group was the best.
This is the original study, and we're going to be talking about the extension of it that just got published. But this is pretty cool. I'm pretty sure I used this in my debate
Exercise is very important. So body fat percentage was even more dramatically better in the exercise plus liraglutide group. And like I said, even the categorical weight loss, meaning who got the most 10%, 15%, and 20% weight reduction, which those are numbers that correlate to really the clinical benefit, you know, the diabetes remission, the sugar control, the cardiovascular outcomes and stuff like that. So a lot more people did better with the combination group. And so so what this extension was after that 52 weeks, everyone went off. They just...
Including liraglutide.
Yeah, they stopped everything, you know, and a year later, they invited everyone back. And, you know, obviously this gets into a problem when only 2/3 of the people responded, right? So it wasn't everybody. It was 2/3 of the people invited back to do this. They were then evaluated, and they were looking at body weight, secondary body fat percentage, waist circumference, hemoglobin A1C, blood pressure, lipids or cholesterol, their pulse, and I think importantly, quality of life via that measurement we call RAND-36. And they did actually do some objective measurement using wrist accelerometers for a week in these people to kind of see what their physical activity and sedentary time was, and they asked them alone. And so of the 66% who completed the phase one and came back to do this, those people who had originally been on liraglutide all by itself, off of everything, not doing anything, they regained almost 10 kilograms from that. So this is where obesity is a chronic disease. If we stop intervening, weight comes back if we don't do anything.
And that includes lifestyle, mind.
Right. And that's what we're getting at very literally. The people who were originally randomized to liraglutide and exercise, remember, they had the most dramatic benefits during the trial, they only regained 7 kilograms.
Yeah.
So remember, they had the most weight reduction. They did regain weight, but 7 kilograms compared to almost 10 kilograms for the medicine alone. And they were not at as good of a starting weight when the trial ended. So, so it says, after 1 year after treatment termination, participants who had received exercise alone or in combination with liraglutide reported the highest levels of moderate to vigorous intensity physical activity, and more people who had received liraglutide without exercise reported no activity. So the people who got that exercise intervention, they kept doing something more than the other people. Maybe not as good, but I think that's really important that, you know, they were still maybe trying a little bit, or at least some of them were.
I think that shows in the, right. in the results.
I think it's pretty obvious. So other little things that came out of this: participants who previously received the combination treatment had improved scores of physical functioning, fewer limitations due to physical health, and they felt like they had better energy and less fatigue compared to those who were originally in the medication only group. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So they just felt better.
Yeah.
You know, this is a year later. They weren't being given anything. They go on to say 2/3 of the initial weight loss had been regained 1 year after liraglutide treatment alone was stopped. The magnitude of regain with liraglutide alone is similar to that observed 52 weeks after a 68-week treatment phase with semaglutide 2.4 weekly. What they're saying here is that weight regain is similar no matter what drug you're getting and then stopping. That's the biology of obesity. People regain their weight if we don't do anything. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I have patients that come off the drug and able to maintain the weight. And we've talked about this before, but it's like when you look at the trials, it's around 10-15% of people that can come off and keep off most of the weight. But if you look at an average, just like this, averages, people are going to regain the weight. And it's really cool, though, to see that exercise and that they kept doing it.
Yeah, some of, you know, obviously not all of them, but more people kept doing something.
And it prevented more of the weight regain. And is it perfect? Did it completely prevent all the weight regain? No, but obviously it's still, especially for quality of life, very important.
Yeah. And so very importantly, this goes to, you know, all the scaremongering here. We got to mention Peter Attia, who tried to tell everyone that these medications cause muscle loss because of you know, kind of a misinterpretation of a small part of one of the studies. It is important to exercise. We don't want people to lose any muscle.
This podcast is literally called Doc.
So, and this trial is a great trial because even though it's not the weekly ones that are more robust, liraglutide is very good. And this showed improved muscle strength, functioning, better body composition, is specifically with exercise. And even another year later, those people had better body composition. So that's the other thing. So that when they're looking just at fat, fat mass, at least fat percentage, those people still had the benefits a year later without any medicine, hopefully doing some of their exercise. And one more little nugget they throw in there is that a very substantial, larger proportion of participants who had exercised compared to non-exercise were able to sustain a weight loss of at least 10% or greater of that initial body weight 1 year after treatment termination. Yeah. Exercise is such a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is going to be studied probably more in the newer generation, the semaglutides and the tirzepatides and maybe some of these
the
newer ones. There are pharmaceutical companies are literally buying for billions, and that's with a B, these new biotech startups that are creating drugs that help increase muscle mass and help with muscle mass retention.
They're being studied for sarcopenic situation, so frail elderly people.
And so they're like,
muscle, but
they're like, well, let's just combine them with these. I here's what I think. I don't think just retaining muscle mass, or I'll say lean mass, because we don't know.
Right.
Again,
we have several podcasts on this. Go back and look.
We don't know exactly if this is all muscle mass. We know that exercise is good, but I don't know that just retaining lean mass is the end all be all. We know that improving quality of life and function are good. We know those things are good. Quality of the muscle is good. So I have so many anecdotes. I should probably just publish my case series on some of these patients that send me their DEXAs, and they have home gyms now. They follow either my LiftRx program or other lifting programs. And they're just, they went from sedentary to now they're just really into exercise. Now they're hitting PRs on dead. I mean, PRs because they weren't doing anything before, but they're starting to get stronger and stronger. They're able to do their first pull-ups.
And they're happier. I mean, talk about, you know, this goes back to the whole mental health issue with these things. Boy, exercise has a lot of data for good mental health. So physical function, mental health, lean mass retention when we're doing this. I do want to, you know, point out, though, that in all those huge trials, even if there was lean mass loss that Peter Attia was so concerned about, the actual clinical outcomes were all still good for people. So even if they did, and if anybody is a shill for muscles, we are.
Yeah.
But the people still had better quality of life. They had better physical function. They had reduced cardiovascular events, all these things. So yes, we need people to exercise, but we also shouldn't scare them away because of the lean mass loss.
The only thing we should be scaring away is using this drug for vanity purposes, as we mentioned before. If you're somebody that just has a little bit of weight, you don't need to use these medicines unless, like, you have a high risk or you're pretty lean. You have a high risk of cardiovascular disease, and we haven't studied it.
Definitely hasn't been studied.
But you never know. And just a low dose, I don't know. I can see that, but like, you shouldn't be using this drug for weight loss if you're just using it for vanity purposes because. Even going on very low calorie diets, just as such as this one we talked about, if you don't have a lot of adipose or fat to lose, you will lose a lot of lean mass doing that.
Right.
So please don't. It's just the same thing to me. I don't think these medicines are inherently catabolic. I have some patients that they get really into exercise, and the amount of lean mass loss was around 10%, which is
step one.
So step one is they saw the total mass or lean mass was about 38%, which is a little higher than
expected. We'd
expect it to be in the mid 20s, and that's what tirzepatide showed. But I have patients that's when they get really into it, it's like 10 to 15%, and I have their DEXAs. I should just publish.
It's probably not muscle.
Yeah,
because they're losing other things that are not fat. Yeah. Right. So when you lose weight, you lose other things. So
yeah. When you adjust, and if you want to listen to Grant, there's a way to really adjust for some of these things, because there's some of those components might be in adipose tissue that aren't being shown in the equations and the studies. But
I'd have to listen to our own podcast with him just to remember that stuff. It was beyond our
DEXA experts by any means. But anyway, I think the point is, so for anybody listening, so what do we do? Do you want to come off the drug? You can try if you want, but understand that obesity is a chronic disease. Most will likely need I always tell everybody, they're likely going to need at least a low dose
of something. And it doesn't have to be these medications, by the way.
Nah.
And that's a whole nother conversation we can have.
We should get Angela Fitch back on. Dr. Fitch, she talks about her own experience in like cycling and going off for months and then feeling like it's getting a little bit too hard and going back on for a little bit and then just still maintaining the weight loss. It's kind of interesting.
What I tell people, my patients who want to get off, I always say these are indicated and studied for long-term use because it's a long-term chronic disease process. It doesn't mean you have to, though.
Right.
What I don't want to happen is for people to fall through the cracks, not follow up, and then show up with all their weight regained, because that is hard. And that's also not really good for you. So we have definitive ways.
Weight
cycling, that's bad. So there are ways that we know successful people who have been able to maintain weight reduction have done. That's exercise volumes above and beyond what helped them get down to weight. They avoid sugary drinks. By the way, they drink more diet beverages. So despite the scaremongering of that.
Protein shakes, meal replacements.
And they continue their dietary quality. And, there are absolutely people who can maintain their weight after these medications. But a lot of people with real obesity can't. And they feel miserable, too. And that we don't want people to feel miserable either. You know, that the food noise that you always talk about.
Yeah. And some patients, what's interesting, because of these extra effects of the GLP agonists on the GLP-1 receptors that people we're not sure about. Things like menstrual cycle, there are patients that when they stop it, they're not regaining their weight, but their menstrual cycle goes irregular again. When they start it again, it goes regular again. All sorts of things like that.
Gets into like leptin and kispeptin up in the brain. These are hormones that, you know, we nerd out about. Although I will make one little plug, because people keep asking me about these leptin sensitivity supplements out there. They are bullshit. Oh my God. Leptin resistance is a real part of the pathophysiology of obesity in a lot of people, but don't buy any supplements or anything that are marketed to fix that.
Oh, and also GLP-1. Like, their supplements are like, oh, we can mimic your own GLP-1. Yeah, they don't work.
That is not true.
They don't work. And even if they could, your body breaks it down within minutes.
In fact, the ones that actually really try to keep your own GLP-1 hormones around, called DPP-4 inhibitors, they're approved for type 2 diabetes. They don't help with weight loss. Yeah. They help a little bit with sugar control, and they have a really good safety record, but they don't cause any weight loss. Yeah. And they're real medicines that actually do that.
Yeah, and it's much higher levels than what you're going to get with a supplement. So don't buy any supplements.
All right.
Lots of exercise. If you're not doing anything right now, try for a 5 to 10 minute walk a day if you can.
And anything that does some sort of, you know, other muscle strengthening exercises.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be complicated. Little stuff at home. I know patients always like to say, this sounds silly, but, you know, we can work on learning how to do push-ups against a table or something to make it easier first. And
10 minutes once a week to start off with. Whatever it is. If you're doing zero, go to something. And
anything.
If you can get up to 2 to 3 times a week or even more, great.
Yeah. We'll have to do a whole episode on that type of prescription.
Yep. Well, that's it. Anything else? We got to go to our
outro.
That's good. Okay. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entity.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.